Paul Duane's Irish folk horror film, All You Need Is Death, is now playing in select theaters and on digital from XYZ Films. Beyondfest says, "You'll never be able to hear another folk tune without shivering in fear." David Jenkins of Little White Lies calls it grimly refreshing and confident. You can tell that everyone involved in the making really understood and appreciated the assignment. Watch the genuinely horrifying All You Need Is Death, available everywhere you buy movies.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Don't touch that dial. You're tuned in to the Dread Podcast Network.
Welcome to Development Hell. For every horror movie that hits VOD, countless others end up DOA. Development Hell is the podcast dedicated to unearthing these cursed horror productions. We're going to find out what went wrong and then decide if these titles still stand a shot at the green light. I am your host, Josh Korngut. I am a filmmaker in Toronto, Canada. This podcast is a proud member of the Dread Podcast Network.
Available now from Dread. Val. Finn, a wanted criminal, hides out with an escort named Val, a demon. Val offers to make his problems disappear if he follows her rules. She has been expecting him all along, and it won't be easy to escape Val's dungeon. Val is out now everywhere you buy or rent movies, and on Blu-ray November 2nd.
I assume you're both aware, but this is a mini audio series on Dread Central where I'm unpacking 5 unmade Halloween sequels. You guys are number 4.
What fine company.
I was wondering if you guys could do me a favor and introduce yourselves to the Development Hell audience. Sure. And Patrick, we can start with you.
Okay. I am Patrick Melton, writer / I suppose sometimes producer and partner too.
My name is Marcus Dunstan, and I have had the great fortune to work with my friend and amazing colleague, Patrick Melton, for over 20 years, Great Scott. And we've also produced a little bit here and there. And when it comes to this tale, for a hot second that lasted about 3.5 months, I was to be the director of this unmade Development Hell sequel called Halloween Returns.
Oh God, I have so many questions and I'm going to get to them. But my first one I have to know is when something really bad happens to someone around Christmas, like you lose a dog, something like that, Christmas is forever ruined. I'm wondering if Halloween now has a cloud over it for you guys. Like every year a Halloween rolls in, are you like, oh no, it's Halloween.
And I'll tell you why. I definitely gave myself an appropriate amount of time to sulk. Only a little bit. If that kind of hurt is just a phantom living rent free in your mind, right?
Wow.
It doesn't exist. It's never. And then, you know, I had to have the chat with what it could have been and realize, well, at least it always could have been exactly what it was supposed to be. And would we have gotten everything we wanted? No. We were at the last second getting budget hits that were really going to compromise some of our abilities to deliver in ways such as score, location, whatnot. And so ultimately, it's the only silver lining, the only blanket of comfort I can give an experience of having this and then seeing it slip away is, thank goodness the version that came out was so very good.
Are you telling me Dimension Films were going to compromise someone's vision? I am
Well, but at the same time, shell shocked. There was a reason I was hired, and I was hired because for some reason they could agree not to hate me. You know, these two factions. He anointed me from a co-writer to a director with The Collector. So I had the same thing happen with that movie where our schedule was cut, our budget was cut, but the opportunity was never cut. It was just, that's how we had to play ball with that movie to get it done. And I was grateful for that. So this was, for me, I would say topically, it was a much bigger opportunity because people had heard of Halloween. We were not introducing a potential sequel machine icon or whatnot. And intrinsically, I really had something to say because we had a, speaking of a loss, we had a family loss that tied into my feelings for wanting to work on this particular story with this particular villain and go back in time and put a little anger back there from something that had happened in real life. So, hey, that there was therapy in getting through it. There was and also there wasn't any punishment of existing. The first time I got a death threat was when it was just announced I was going to do it.
I'm not surprised.
It was from John Gulager, too. It was really weird.
It was from John Gulager, and it was also...
Who is John Gulager? And why is his last name Gulager?
Oh, my gosh.
The director of Feast 1, 2, 3.
Oh, I really showed myself there for who
Piranha
I am.
Piranha 3DD.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
This is a classic.
There's more.
The Paul Scheer vehicle.
Yes. This was the first death threat tweet that had a co-signer in Patrick Melton, which I thought was like,
oh, that's
nice.
There's
a lot of problems
in the world. Let's be fair. It doesn't, you know.
It was so over the top. It was pretty funny. Like, it wasn't just coming for me. I wanted to, like, burn my family line out of existence. Like, I haven't even done anything wrong yet.
Very Michael Myers, though.
Michael Myers
in a blank paragraph.
During Project Greenlight, we were notified, or not, or like, we reached out. An inmate from some correctional facility reached out to ask if we wanted. He was so angry with what Gulager was doing, he actually offered a service to murder him.
Oh, that's
we didn't take him up.
Collaborative,
but you know, reflecting back, maybe we should have. You know,
this is a collaborative industry. Art can't be made in a vacuum. So I appreciate that.
Project Greenlight 3 would have taken an interesting turn.
It can't be made in a vacuum, but sometimes it can really suck.
Wow, that really worked out for all of us.
And John Gulager, by the way, I love this man. He's our dear friend, ally, advocate, and he is out directing a movie right now, which I don't have permission to reveal anything, but that is just for the folks out there. That great artist is still doing it.
And he doesn't want you to die anymore?
He didn't want us to die. Someone offered to kill him for us.
Yeah.
Right.
Any chance to work with that man, I will. Yeah.
He could want to kill you, and we just don't know. I hear your names quite often when I'm doing my development hell research. So before I get into it, it's true, I do. And I've definitely done episodes on you guys before this. So you're giving me a lot to work with. What does development hell mean to you as a filmmaker? When you think of the term development hell, what comes to mind? What is it?
The usual is sort of what what happens. Well,
just everyday life.
See, the problem is the biggest problem. And this is, I mean, the fun thing about Dimension was that they made a lot of movies and they didn't screw around, and like, they needed to fill that DVD case that they had, or even VHS case that they had. So they didn't care what it was so much. They gave you a lot of freedom, a lot of ability. They had to get something in there, and so you were able to do it. Development hell comes, what?
Well, I was going to say, but when he says DVD and VHS, mind you, this was the day when a VHS DVD, let's say it was a Prophecy sequel, could have a budget of $7 million, be shot on 35mm, have a wonderful cast, beautiful production value. There was an ancillary market that was an entire industry. And then the same industry, Dimension, would allow us to, Patrick and I, we worked on a Highlander movie. We were able to help on
Source,
Pulse. We were helping on Cursed, Black Christmas. Like, they had some things where
hell yeah,
anybody in a nearby stable.
Halloween 2, Rob Zombies. Yes.
The most loved of the Halloween canon.
It had this awesome trailer with Knights in White Satin.
Knights in White Satin. That's a brilliant
trailer. Good.
Good movie title. I haven't heard of her.
It was good.
But that was the thing. They also had to fill theatrical commitments and really had for a long time had a great stake in December. And with Scream, the first Scream, every December, because Melton and I worked as theater projectionists back, you know, to really date technology, we were threading film back then when Scream came out. And I remember in Iowa City, Iowa, we didn't get Scream opening weekend. We had to drive to Cedar Rapids to see it at a Sixplex. On the fourth weekend, when it made more than any other weekend it had prior, that's when Iowa City got it. And it was so fun to watch that. So then
my theater, the Engler,
became a Dimension staple. And you can find that, like, oh, some people don't necessarily want to be grossed out, but a little terror around the holidays was sometimes a wonderful.
How about that new trailer, huh? Scream 5, but not 5, but Scream. What do you think about that trailer?
It looks great.
I know, man. Doesn't
it? I've been writing news about Scream, though, nonstop, and I am a little dizzy at this point, but I am ready for it. I'm very excited. Yeah. But as you know, a good trailer doesn't mean much these days, you know?
True.
It doesn't always mean much, but yeah, I have a really good feeling about it as well. The filmmakers are good. I've liked everything that
interesting just like how they revealed the old characters, you know, like it felt just a tad more serious and intense than
the first Scream. Also got was an NC-17. It didn't get an X, but
it had that meta tone that was brilliant at the time, but then, you know, it's been copied a million times over.
Yes.
So we're even by the fourth, I mean, but feeling a little bit just like a little fatigue in the back of my,
I mean, you know, back how of my dare head. You, how dare you say that about Scream 4?
But Scream 4 is actually quite genius.
Like, the pump, like,
I'll go to the mat for Scream 4. And then a lot of people didn't like it. They came around on it.
I mean, I've loved it since day one. It invented Emma Roberts, who, you know, is the voice of the generation.
It was ahead of its time. It totally was.
Absolutely ahead of its time. A little too long of an opening, though. I think they could have reeled that in a little bit.
Yeah.
So it seems like you guys aren't super mad about development hell and your journey through it, which is nice to hear.
Well, okay. I was making a point. Is that you have two types of projects. We learned this. Like, you have two types of projects in the industry. One is the one that, like, they have to make. Like, Tom Cruise is available for these 2 weeks, or we have this DVD case and we need to put a movie inside it. We need it made. And, like, that's when everyone's serious and you're doing it, you're going forward, and you're making it. Mm-hmm. And you just got to get through that development bullshit and get through the notes where they're like, you know, it's a dumb note, but eventually they'll just give up because we have to be in location in Bulgaria and they won't even know what we're doing. And then there's what you're talking about, everything else. And unfortunately, 90% of what is done is everything else. And so, you know, we have, I mean, geez, like, good Lord, we have so much, like, stuff. I mean, no,
the reasons
that I'm like, this is really good. And it's just never going to get made. And you know it. And there's a moment you know it when you start getting
really?
These goofy.
Because it seems like with the two of you, a lot of the times you guys are like rearing to go. Like, you're filming or you're about to film. And then shit hits the wall.
Well, that's
it happens.
I don't know what you might be referring to.
Oh, I have a couple things I'm referring to. And I'm going to get into it right now, actually. So
That was rare. That wasn't development hell. That was in production.
That was actual hell, I think.
Totally fine. Development was actually great.
The Collected, one of my most popular episodes. People are very vocal about it. Why do you think, out of all my episodes, I received the most response about The Collected? Do you have any insight on that?
I think it speaks to the nature of the podcast, in that when something entirely doesn't exist, it can be that anything and be an echo of pontification. When it comes to that, you know,
echo of pontification.
Okay, there you go.
I like it.
You know, 8 days of proof of concept coming to life is a different thing, where you kind of feel the momentum, you get the excitement, you get, you know, Santa's halfway down the chimney.
Yeah, he's coming. Yeah.
And then you're waiting with your hands open for the bag to drop. And you're like, what happened? And then instead your house explodes.
Do you hate Canada now because of it?
No, we were not there. When it comes to that one, as any good villain, it ain't dead yet.
I'm aware. I am absolutely aware. I have my own sequel in the works, let's just say.
Okay.
About The Collected. So,
you know, I want to inspire a podcast that we can be a guest on for you, that things that have survived that.
I was going to say, you don't want my sequel to actually happen. If my sequel happens, yours didn't. So
we're in the era of the multiverse. Why not?
This is the multiverse.
Yeah.
With all of these reboots. Absolutely.
I mean, my goodness. Because that's what I've also really enjoyed about how the marvelous success pun intended by using Marvel in that word, has opened up all these realms of creativity too. Like the fact that the guy responsible for me throwing my first bucket of fake blood, Sam Raimi, is now playing with toys in this universe yet again.
Again, in a whole new era. Yeah.
It's so cool. But finally, like, yes, by his Spider-Man 2 at the Doc Ock coming to existence scene had a little bit of that spin tilt that we saw in Evil Dead, Evil Dead 2 and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
Darkman. And the fact that he now gets the characters of the Strangerverse and that man gets to be unleashed in there. Oh, goodness. When I was a kid in ill-fitting khaki shorts, we found ourselves, we were a group from Iowa just doing something with our spring break. So, of course, you drive and you stand outside the Man's Chinese and hope to see a premiere, and it was Face Off. And so the big stars are walking by, but I'm the only kid, I remember this, the only name I shouted, and it came out like just like a gag reflex, but at full decibel, was, "That's Sam Raimi!" It was kind of like, what? I'm like, yeah! That was my totem of awesome.
Did he direct Face Off, or is he just happened to be there?
He was at the premiere. That's what's freaking
John Woo directed Face Off.
John Woo.
And that's coming back. Face Off is facing off again at some point.
Face Off is brilliant.
I hope so. I thought that was a brilliant movie. Like, great sci-fi action, and even like enough, that beautiful sequence set to Over the Rainbow with all the beautifully timed slow motion, a child hiding from gunfire, hearing an innocent world, and then two megastars in the peak of their primes just blazing hell through the center. I thought that was great. Really cool. What I love about John Woo is John Woo plus a little blood is really what has inspired some of the photography and some of the things we'll attempt from time to time, where you get that the dread-inducing tee-up of violent instruments coming towards something you care about, don't want to get hurt, and then boom, go into regular fast.
What's another John Woo joint that I would know the name of?
You would know Jean-Claude Van Damme's Hard Target. That's probably the movie you wake up to.
Okay, yeah. I'm a homo, so I don't know about that movie. So
you don't have to give me Target?
It's
all very mask for mask titles so far.
Okay.
Well, I mean, Mission Impossible 2.
Okay, well, there you go. Now I'm with you.
You know, when he's hanging, he's got the long, beautiful hair in this movie.
Windtalkers,
yeah. What was the one that Chow Yun Fat, the one that like made him? It was like not.
Killer? What
was
it? Bullet to the Head?
Hard
Boiled.
Hard boiled.
It's out of my frame of reference, and that's fine. We are all different, and we celebrate each other. So outside of Halloween, a big horror franchise, have you ever like teetered in a play box of a different big horror IP that you can tell me about? Or is Halloween sort of the main
only
one?
Only all of them. And they all have the sad story.
Of it didn't happen.
We were, I mean, just very briefly, like, it was Friday the 13th. Uh-oh. And it was like, that was always sort of like coming about, like it's going to happen. It wasn't going to happen. Oh, it was going to be the one in the snow. It didn't happen. That one should have
been the one in the snow.
No. That was not us. That should have happened. That would have been awesome. But,
anything in the snow.
And then it was like mentioned to us. And I literally remember driving in my car through a neighborhood, and it was like, you know, the madness you get at like 5:30 when suddenly everything happens at one point. And like, I feel like Mark's just like, it was a producer on the phone. They want to talk about Friday the 13th now. And I was like, oh my God. And it was Friday the 13th, and they were like, oh, we had all these million ideas, and it was like, okay, so it's found footage, we're like, okay, PG-13, we're like, wait, found footage, how is it, so it's modern, and we're like, wait, okay, and it's like, the green, and there's cameras at this camp, and we're like, okay, we came up with a cool idea, but it was like
there was one visual pitch that hopefully, you know, it's now so far,
it's probably over. They're not making a found footage Friday 13th.
But
here's the thing: the image pitched was enough to inspire us to open up. So credit where credit is due. There was some gas in that tank, and it was, you know, imagine you're, you know, seeing this image, and it is a disquieting angle, low to the ground, because the camera's been set up. Oh, wait, is it someone using it for night vision defensively to try to track the, whoa, there's the blur. You get a flash of the mask, the feet run away, and then an impossible like yank up into the air. So like you could see the coordination of it. And the last thing is you see the boot now glistening with someone's viscera, walks by, nudges the camera, it tilts over, and you slowly go in on the date feature, and it just says F13. And I thought, okay, that cool. opened up my brain. And I thought, that is intense. That yeah. is cool. So could so we use the narrative to live up to that intensity, and can you find it? Maybe, because now, I'd say if you repackage that concept now, we are self-surveilled. It's our Ring camera. It's our Nest camera. It's our, oh, I can phone. Get through my watch. And, oh, I've got the lapel one. And, oh, so there are ways where, imagine being a parent and a group of parents, and that first 911 call does get out, and they're just not going to get there in time. But you can log in and watch your kids.
I find like a limited series monster. Of that with that streaming that would have less. See, the interesting thing is like, or strange thing is that like a movie like that comes with for the studio and the producers uh-huh. like getting it right. But now with like streaming, like you could just be like, no, it's just a one-off idea that we're just doing
yes.
and do it like that. And everyone would be like, oh, cool. It's great. And it's funny how horror uh-huh. hasn't quite.
Well, it should be interesting that. How the new Paramount Activity plays out, because I feel like that's going to be one of the first versions of what you're saying.
Yeah, and that's Paramount Plus, all right?
It is. It's like we're back into the whole DVD era. We're going to get tons of direct
streaming
sequels.
You're right. I think that's exciting.
Like, and when the DVD era like fell out under itself, I was so sad because we were about to get so many direct-to-video Dark Castle sequels.
That's right.
Which is my little
more prophecy,
dream.
You know.
More prophecy.
How about this? The Return to
More
House
Children of the Corn.
Yes. Did you say Return to House on Undertale? Did that just come up? There's going to be so many more of those. And my
brilliant Choose Your Own Adventure engine where they shot a lot of other movies.
Hell yeah. I own that shit. So hell yes, I know. And they were actively working on the next one.
Oh, yeah.
There was
they had tons of stuff. Like
they had
Dark
tons
Castle.
Of stuff. And then all of a sudden, people just stopped buying DVDs.
But mm-hmm. the problem, though, with Dark Castle 2 is like they would have these great ideas, great scripts, great ideas, and they would just often put on their big movie producer hats and then be like, oh, shit, we need to cast whoever won Best Actress of the Year last year. We'll put her in this movie, and it's going to have so much pressure on it that it has to do well. And
you're
then it does okay.
Okay.
I know. No, there's a few. And it was also the one with the snow one with Hilary Swank.
Oh, Orphan.
No, it was before Orphan.
It was the one with,
and then it was the one with John Cusack.
And it was called Whiteout.
Yeah, Whiteout.
Whiteout.
And it was these really cool ideas. And they had a bunch of other scripts too, Marcus. You remember, like, we were, I can't remember who was there at the time.
I really wanted to do the Tingler there.
Cool.
They gave themselves so much pressure because these huge budgets, and while it probably, if you would have done it like for 15 million or even a little bit less, 15 million, it would have been great. It would have been fine. You know?
Yeah.
Which is a solid double, which is respectable. Well, now who knows what it does, right? Like it's streaming. I don't know. Does it do well? Stuff comes out every week I feel like people are kinder to streaming things as opposed to...
Oh, because it's a lower stake. Wait, do you guys have favorite Dark Castle movies that you can share?
Favorite Dark Castle? You know, when you said that, the one that comes to mind, and I think I really appreciated how I found it endlessly surprising, and I saw many stories within the story, but 13 Ghosts.
Oh, yeah.
Well, 13 Ghosts is quite a classic. Also, best DVD menu probably ever.
Oh, because I thought like this is one thing I was one time we were in there just we were talking about another project entirely. But I was like, why aren't you guys doing that limited series where every episode is the origin of the ghost and then it builds up to the representation of the 13 ghosts?
Oh, I know. Or just give us a Jackal series because that shit was scary.
Oh my god,
movie! I love that movie.
Right,
I
mean,
Orphan was Orphan. Is Orphan probably really? Considered their best movie that they did?
Yes, really.
Like, Orphan.
I'm not an Orphan stan as much as everybody else is, but I appreciate it. You know, I see it for its value for sure.
I mean, it was just remember Marcus? Oh yeah, okay. So like we were in there and I can't remember the exact name, but he was so excited about the Orphan, the twist, and then the John Cusack one.
The factory.
I don't even know about the John Cusack.
Okay, right? Like,
well,
it was to
have a release, and I think it became a victim of a schedule shuffle. And so it was released, and this is a handsomely produced.
It was like a big deal. It was supposed to be a big deal.
What was it called?
The Factory.
And this is not Whiteout. This is a totally different thing. Right. Okay.
Whiteout is Kate Beckinsale and has
right. You know, we were just talking about the unmade Alice movie, and the writers from Whiteout were supposed to be the Alice writers. And
yeah, the Hayes brothers, right? Well, they went on to do, Conjuring.
Red, I think. Were they the Red guys? You know, the ones with the old people that
Hayes, like the Hayes brothers. Wasn't it the Hayes brothers?
Yeah, there's all these brothers. Who knows? If you're okay with that, I'd love to jump into the world of Halloween a little bit more.
Sure.
What were your first introductions to the Halloween franchise that you could remember? Like, how far back does it go?
Well, I mean, watching the first
original.
When I was a kid, absolutely.
What was that like? Was it scary or were you like already jaded? It was
absolutely scary. And Michael Myers was the one that could get in my head, in my dreams. And I would be outside. All the lights on the porches were out. And I lived in a small town in Illinois, Macomb. So the photography of Haddonfield
might as well have been
was right outside the window. Only in the dream, my shadow was twice as long as my little 9-year-old self or however, and no matter how many times I turned around, he'd just be getting a little closer. No matter how fast I ran, it was never fast enough. And he'd just be a little bit, and then his knife would get a little closer to my heels,
Why Michael? Why do you think he's the one that got in your head like that over the other ones?
I found him to be a shark on land. The dark pits of his eyes were like the complacent eyes of a shark, and he simply would just come, had to keep moving or he wouldn't be breathing. And that was it. It was just this straight line, like an arrow coming
towards
the
target. Predator. That's what they keep saying in Halloween Kills. They wouldn't stop saying that.
Have you seen Halloween Kills yet?
I saw it an hour ago.
Actually. What? Oh,
congratulations.
You just saw it today?
I saw it today. Yeah, I had to see it because I'm reviewing it for Dread. And so that was a screening I had right before this. So I'm having a very Halloween heavy day today. Okay. I'm okay with it.
Going trick-or-treating later, I'm sure, as well.
I am.
Do you remember when you were a kid, we would do this when it was like, I can't the actual date, but it was halfway, you'd go half Halloween, and it was when it was halfway. The other side, whatever, the other side of the year.
Yeah, halfway to Halloween. Same with halfway to Christmas. Of course. What am I?
And like some old lady would be like, oh, okay, and she'd give you something.
Oh, no, I never went as far as actually
going. No, we actually went to houses and stuff like that. I mean, this is a different time. This is like the 80s where that was
accepted. Interesting. That's interesting. That could be like an idea in there.
Kids went missing, just randomly.
Yeah. A lot of kids died halfway to Halloween. Nobody understands why. What are your general relationships with this franchise? Is it like one of your favorites? Is it one of your least favorites? How does it stack up with all the other horror IPs?
Well, it simply was the series that touched greatness right away. There was elegance and there was grace, and it had the filmmaking painted more violence than was ever depicted in front of that camera. And it also, I remember this man in this jacket who made me feel safe. And whenever the man in the jacket was on screen, I felt okay and I could drop my hands from my eyes. But when that man was gone, Dr. Loomis, he just simply the best. I thought that was...
I thought he was terrifying. He seemed very unhinged to me as a child. He scared
Loomis?
Me. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the accent, right?
And then in number five, he literally attacks Jamie. Starts shaking her in her bed, which is fair. She's annoying. Talking again. Why? Mm-hmm. It's weird that you're not talking.
It was like, for some reason, it was also the other ones, like, they were serious for the first few films and then often just skewed into, very meta or horror comedies almost, right? Like, this just never did that,
Stayed serious the whole time. No matter how silly it got, it was straight faced about it.
Yeah.
And who would also attract it? Like, there was something that particular series would always attract an X factor that raised its bar. And even if it was the constant of Donald Pleasance throughout many of the entries, even when they went into Halloween 3 Season of the Witch, you had the great Tom Atkins, you had Stacey Nelkin, you had beautiful monologues and big ideas, and it would always swing for the fences in a certain regard.
Yeah, they took it seriously. I feel like the Akkads maybe were a part of
yeah
they really treated it who said this? Someone's like, Clive Barker were like, yeah, they treat Michael like he's Hamlet. And I think that's true.
I think we can attest to this that we worked with Malik, and that is someone when they absolutely honor, respect, and like, you know, Malik sees he gets to speak to a family when he's in that world. You know, his family created this, gave it its opportunity, gave it its life.
Oh yeah.
And he respects it as such. And I think that comes through. That becomes, it gives everybody an infusion of where to place their standards when approaching that universe. And so I think Halloween 2018 was a proof of that hope. They all went out there. It's like, I know you saw the other movies. We're aiming up here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we'll, you know, I'm sure go into our sort of entry point to it. And ours was trying to get back to the tone, the exact tone of the original.
Haven't seen yet. I'm always surprised why they're going bigger and not smaller, which is what the first one did.
I felt there was moments in Halloween 2018. A lot of it felt like they were trying to do that. I thought.
I think try is the word.
Oh, Joshua.
I talk shit about Halloween 2018 all the time, and my listeners get so mad. I have to stop.
I wouldn't
it's
say
not helping me.
It has a lot of history. It has a lot of deep love, a lot of passion. So it's
2018.
The franchise. So it's natural for me. It felt though like it was in the same world as the original one, and it felt it was at least it was getting back to basics a bit. The sequence when they go to see him at the mental institute was fucking brilliant, like with the chessboard pieces and him standing there and the dog barking and like it, and it was just so eerie and creepy and felt like it had that tone from the original for me. It takes place on Halloween night, you know, just it hit a lot of notes for me. I mean, it was probably bigger and more sprawling, than it needed to be, like you were saying, but,
yeah.
Well, if I may, like, here's what my sister, my mother and I all made that movie an appointment, you know, so I out here, I saw a day one first screening I could get into, and my mom, you know, wanted to see the story of this victim come back and face this boogeyman.
Do you have a horror mom or just a normal mom?
She was born on Friday the 13th.
Very slutty, if that's what you, yes.
I mean, that's in there, sure. I mean, Patrick would know.
It was the 90s, you know. It was a wild time. This is
appropriate.
No, I'm sorry. Do you guys have a favorite Halloween sequel?
Instantly, it's the original two.
That's a good one.
Two is good. I like four.
Oh, four is great. I just revisited four. I oscillated on it, and now I realize it's incredible. It's
four.
I mean, it's absurd.
I watched four when I was homesick, because when I was sick in the in the 80s, my mother would get. I'm sick. And she used to go, okay, I'm going to work. But then she'd come home at like 10:30, bring me a 2 liter of soda, because that's what you needed. You need to stay hydrated. Soda.
And electrolytes. Then, totally.
Well, or just like Coke or like, like Sunkissed Orange, whole 2 liter. And then like four videos. It had a list of all the videos at the store, and I would pick them out and I'd call them up and say, I need this, this, and this. And she'd pick them up. And go, isn't that great? And then I watched four in that environment, and I was like, just completely freaked out.
Well, here's
it's serious. It had the music, that had the photography, the voyeuristic style.
There's a kid that can act, which I'm always very spooked out by whenever that's possible.
She was
Daniel Harris, legit. Not only a great person, great actor, but what an amazing moonshot of playing two different lead characters in two different Halloween universes.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
I liked H2O at the time. Like, remember that was very exciting when it came out?
What do you mean at the time? H2O.
Go watch it again. Classic.
Yeah. Yeah, H2O was my 2018.
Okay, H2O. So I watched H2O recently, and it was like, it felt so, it was so dimension of that era.
Yeah.
They were like, thank God, we got these Avid machines. We can just do the credits on this. Look at this crazy visual.
It's just Halloween. Scream. It's but, like, you know, it's the most post-Scream thing I've ever seen.
I would side
with... What a cast. Like, oh my gosh. Like,
oh, I know. You're not going to make it out.
I just... Four and H2O probably would have had a more significant ranking, but they biffed the mask.
The original. Oh, yeah. I mean, not as bad as five.
Five kind of looked... Who does the mask? Or I probably shouldn't say it because it would just be insulting, but it's kind of like a great mask of a different actor was used.
Yeah, it's not Shatner anymore. Like, yeah, you know, it's Brent, Picard Brent, or something.
Brent Spiner, maybe.
Resurrection, not the worst mask. I just watched Resurrection. I know everyone hates it and minds it.
Is that the karate one?
Oh, Sir Josh, but...
Watch it. I lived it. We lived it.
It has one of the best scenes in a Halloween sequel. Michael Myers walks into a room, and then in the same shot, Michael Myers walks into a room.
And one of those Buster Rhymes?
It was a bit where the reality show component was doing a prank, but for the viewer in that moment, we were not ahead of the movie. We were not ahead of any character. It was just this innocent moment where I remember going, whoa, and like everything fired in the synapses, like, are you kidding me? This is... And then, it had the...
I just watched it for a recent episode because we did an episode on Halloween Retribution, which was going to be the follow-up to Resurrection that never happened, which is shockingly good, actually.
And as soon as you kill Laurie Strode, you kill hope. And when you're opening 10 minutes, directed by another person, I believe Steve Miner came back to direct her death, it does something to the rest of the viewing experience. And it starts you on such a nadir that... What are we supposed to laugh at? What are we supposed to... We don't have 20 years of caring for a person. But if he represents the last of hope, or he earns our hope by the end of that one, it just sets you up for this nosedive emotionally that a cipher of evil can't really resurrect you from. One thing is, like, if your goal is to depress us right away and you succeed, we don't have much... I mean, there's... you kind of lose the popcorn of it.
She did nail it, though. Well, I rewatched it, and like,
it was trying to shift
it
to something else, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you know, and a lot of it, the hate comes just because it felt like Dimension had this habit of making things gimmicky, adding a gimmick to it. And Bob felt like he had to have that to sell it, but he didn't, and he never had faith, but he was so would always go to it. I mean, so our story, like, ours is when we were brought on to rewrite a script, brought on to do Halloween. What's the one that Matt Vane did? It was Matt Vane and then Goldberg. No.
Is it Asylum?
Asylum. Mm-hmm. It was Halloween Asylum. So, like, they were given the script for Halloween Asylum, and it had been rewritten by Stolberg and Goldfinger, and they were just kind of stuck with it. They weren't sure what they wanted to do, and we had different ideas, and the only thing Bob said is whatever. He's like, whatever, but it just I need to have Michael caught and in the electric chair, because that's the poster, him in an electric chair. And there was some tagline that came up with, like, Halloween electrifies this year, some bullshit like that. So we had to, you know, okay, so we had to work with that, but that was based if you look at our deal, it was actually a rewrite.
I'm wondering, like, how did you just kind of said it, but, like, how did you officially get involved with this project? Like, what was like the first call?
It was Matt Stein.
We were lucky to have dinner with Matt Stein, mentioned, hey, what's going on with that? And then the three of us just over a dinner were passionate enough about wanting to.
He was a Dimension executive forever. He was Bob's right hand guy. And, like, forever. I mean, he was, like, a long time. And so, so it was Matt Stein. And then we talked about it, like Marcus said, and then we met Malik.
Cool. And, I actually reached out to him on Twitter. I was like desperate to get him to be the finale guest, but I don't think I'm going to hear from him.
He's a really nice guy. He's just got a lot of stuff going on. So he just made.
Especially now.
He's not. I mean, he's probably not like, you know, he's not ghosting you or anything. He just probably.
Oh no, no. I didn't take it as such.
He doesn't feel like a guy who checks his DMs much, honestly.
Yeah, his Twitter DMs even specifically.
No, so. Probably not. He probably's like, yeah, he's a great guy. But.
What was the writing process like? How did that start? How did you like the script?
We read the original script, and we completely emulated that style. The script is very short. I want to say it's 93, 92, 97, somewhere around there, under 100. And it was a very sparse style of writing. The shape. That's what he's called, and so that we did that, and so it was intimidating, and not it's because it's one thing to write, another thing to direct. So I know Marcus was very intimidated of like, oh shit, we have to get this right.
Oh yeah, people take this franchise very seriously. Lots of death threats coming your way, probably.
Yeah, probably. Right. Yeah.
It was
so we just we had this idea, and the original idea, right, is that so the end of the first movie. Michael gets shot, falls off the balcony, and is on his back, right? And Loomis comes out, sees him, goes back in, and then comes back out, and Michael's gone. So yes. Our movie, the first shot, is a POV of Michael on his back, looking straight up, and then stands up, sees the house, looks left, right, and then continues on his journey. And we follow him in the same, Anna Glide style of the original, which they created that style, that shot.
I'm not sure how you would shoot that. Like the camera work for that sounds tricky as hell.
Not that hard at all, in the sense that it was the cameras that we could have access to would have allowed that in a much easier way, where we found who had a in great shape original Panaglide from that era. Yeah. And the Panaglide itself is a giant, like carrying a giant metal futon. But the trick was, can you mimic the exact gait of Michael Myers per that weight, which in the first two, it has a bit of a float. Now, if it was just steady, if it was Brian De Palma, doesn't have the same effect as it being Michael Myers, where his float was him. That was something the camera gave us that became his personality. This person didn't talk. We were absorbing everything visually. And to have his point of view meant a lot. So that was then showed those shots to a marvelous master of the craft. That would be BJ McDonald, who is not only an amazing filmmaker, director, but is a master of all things camera operating. He's like, oh, that's a weight displacement. Here's how we can recreate it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, now that feels right. Second thing was the mask. Gary Tunnicliffe was on board for the mask to recreate it exactly. And even he bought a singular prop. He found this knife that was a very intimidating knife, not like the type of knife that looks terrifying in the dark, no matter what house you're in, but just a little more personality to it. And we wanted to give every signature of this boogeyman a tiny origin of where all those pieces would come from. He wouldn't just have a knife. No, this would have to be the knife pulled by a loved one who has it turned against her or him, because that butcher's block belongs to the one person that couldn't kill him the first time. So this knife means something,
Well, when we dived into the original and the sequel, and like we were pulling out all these little things and creating a universe within the universe. So it's like there's a moment with Loomis in the beginning of the movie. He calls Doctor, but he's under Dr. Rogers, right? Mm-hmm. And like he said, tell him, like, tell Dr. Rogers a so-and-so, and he hangs up. And so we're like, okay, so who's Dr. Rogers? Like, what was that about? And then so we bring him. And then like the third cop is like, you got the blonde hair in the background, Gary Hunt. So that became our guy. And so we grabbed all these things and tied it in so that, we could tell a really awesome story that 98% of the audience would totally get and not need anything. But then we also were trying to layer in these details that the 2%, the nerds like us, would have been like, losing their shit over. And so,
for example, Harry Grimbridge ran the Halloween great. Shop in town. So yes, right. there was the pumpkin, the skull, and the witch.
Shamrock novelties.
Yes. Yes.
Right. Because you remember
the Halloween killer mask.
Of course.
Right. Because Blackfriars existed in the opening, so Silver Shamrock.
Was it Harry Dean Stanton? Who was the actor?
No, not Harry Dean Stanton. I don't recall the actor's name, but he was. Unfortunately, I don't recall him.
He's the old man in the beginning of three that stumbles forward, right? And then,
yes.
oh,
and then
he yeah, no better.
His whole face.
The 2%.
By the robot? Death by robot? Yeah, I remember this now.
Finally, someone has figured out we can't trust those robot people.
Not yet. There's still a lot of trust to be built. the recalibration. And I'm just wondering, where did this word come from? Is this from you guys? Is this from the studio?
No, that was us.
Yeah, well, we had to find verbiage to not upset anybody.
But you couldn't say it was a reboot, because Bob did not want to do a reboot. He's like, I rebooted, he did the Rob Zombie ones, which were a reboot.
Which were a reboot, yes.
And you could even consider H2O a bit of a reboot, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Kind of, not really, but a continuation of the first one, ignoring a whole bunch of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he just didn't want us to do that. So we're like, okay, we wanted to do a direct sequel to the first one. That was what we wanted to do.
So what does it mean then, exactly?
We were going to embrace the absolute stream of one, mm-hmm. create a delta in that gap between absolute one and two plus 10 minutes, like that opening 10 minutes of two. And then the recalibration is, what if there was a legit Halloween 3 that wasn't Season of the Witch, but continued the Michael Myers storyline, and it just had to take place in modern times?
There's also stuff too, Marcus, too, because this is like a Rick and Morty parallel universe, right? Where we're saying the first one happened, but for ours to happen in modern day, because Bob said it happened at modern day, it kind of had to happen later.
Yep.
But we're not even gonna acknowledge
that. So that
recalibration. That's what it was.
And here was the one thing I was happy with the concept behind this idea. And the concept behind the idea was Halloween happened for the people, and I'll just skip right to it. So by the time we were growing up and getting dressed up for Halloween, you could have a John Wayne Gacy paint set, you could have a Manson mask, you could have you knew about killers. So if Michael Myers actually happened in Illinois, someone would be selling the mask this guy was caught in. So Harry Grimbridge was selling that mask, and it was a Silver Shamrock property.
Yeah, I think
that allows is
my favorite moment of
resurrection. So other people, a la the best moment of two, when that poor kid is also dressed like a Michael Myers type, but it wasn't justified because maybe someone else had it, but you could have that. And you now imagine being, forced with trying to dragnet this phantom in your town and while trying to save them. But anybody could look like that. Anybody could be on panic watch and risky behavior because they could look like this guy as well. So that is a dose that wasn't the whole fabric of the narrative. It ultimately was about the survivors' grief and just rage at a system that's designed to kill failing the one thing. This one thing, like we're all supposed to put our hate eggs into one basket, watch a boogeyman die, get rid of all of our grief, and no. Instead, it acts as an accelerant.
Kind of is a big theme in Halloween Kills. So I'm excited for you guys to check that out.
It's going to be on my phone in like a week, isn't it? Oh, wait. Tomorrow. Wait. Tomorrow? No.
Friday. Yeah, I do have to say I am already sick of Scream. I'm very glad Halloween's out. When you're writing news, I'm a news writer at Dread, it's like 3 months of it just never ending. So now Scream Country is approaching real fast. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
When is
January? Mid-January?
Oh, okay. Yeah, so what about a black phone?
Okay, I think that looks absolutely terrifying.
It does.
I'm a huge Joe Hill fan.
Yeah, me too.
You are. Have you read Heart-Shaped Box?
Yes. Yes.
It's his first one. It's basically about Rob Zombie. Yeah. If Rob Zombie got haunted by a heart-shaped box.
Yeah. I just saw some picture of him the other day. How he's literally becoming his dad. And you wonder when is he going to just murder his dad and then...
And just absolve him?
Become his dad.
Dude, I just saw Candyman and I loved it. That was brilliant.
I loved it too. And then everyone kind of talked down to me about it. And then I stopped talking about it. Yeah,
it was like a thing.
It's brilliant. It is.
Yeah, brilliant. I thought it was brilliant too.
We had a triple feature. We did Invisible Man, which is obviously awesome, Candyman, and then a nice surprise in the form of the Night House.
Uh huh. The Night House is something for sure.
Yeah, it was. For once, bringing up like the Ghost House, Dark Castle mantra. What they were doing is like, well, this felt like the way you do it. These amazing components, but it's still made with an aesthetic that could tell a personal story.
Yeah, and it's still fun, and it's not too serious about it all. Mm-hmm. Speaking of fun, I'm wondering, what was it like working with Miramax and Dimension on this particular project? What was that dynamic like?
Oh, I actually, it was just fine. It was
You mentioned Miramax though.
They were not so much a presence until
it wasn't Miramax wasn't involved. We were under the impression that Dimension owned it.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then we were surprised to learn that Dimension did not own it. They had an option on it, and Miramax it lapsed, and Miramax took the project back, and that's how our project ended. Was a surprise to everyone.
Was this surprising to you? Like, did you have an idea that time was going to lapse at some point?
No one knew that.
They just did not tell you this.
I don't think they knew that.
Like, well, that's not good business.
Bob knew, no one knew because it was just they did, and you know that was sort of like they did that. They had a lot of stuff like that they had, and they had to make things with ticking clocks and so no, it was and it was a bummer too because like we could have been shooting, but that was the dark side of Dimension where you had a lot of creative freedom and there was a lot of excitement and energy, but sometimes they didn't quite have the money. Well, we knew things were going sideways because it was yes, 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 most of the way. And then we got a call from one of the execs there, and the both execs were great. And you're dealing with a guy who's tough to deal with. Mm-hmm. And, they were like, what about Bulgaria?
Classic Halloween country, Bulgaria, right?
And they're like, no, bring in the cars and like, you know, we're like, we're like gonna bring the architecture. Like, no, because who is it?
Bulgaria.
Well, who's the guy? Millennium. He built like a soundstage over there.
Avi, I don't know, but
Avi Lerner. Yeah, he has like a really cool set over there, and it's supposed to be in American style, and so we just knew then like this feels like, and we didn't need a lot for ours. I mean, I don't know if you read the script, but it was like
there was the death knell was here's what was really cool is that we had Matt Stein, Matt Signer, and Mr. Levine,
Keith Levine,
and Bob and Malik, mm-hmm. all working together. Along with who I think was going to be Sean Gowrie, to say like, all right, how much do we have? Right, we can probably get 5.5. Great, we will write exactly to 5.5. Just help us. We don't care how hard the note is to take. If that means we hit the number, great. We got it there. Then we were hit with a $1.8 million tax for the false starts of the previous sequels that didn't happen.
Ooh.
And then all of a sudden the time we needed goes, then the budget's gone and there isn't any more time to adjust. So you're like stuck with something that was shaped to be a live machine. And now you're under the hood, just randomly pulling out parts.
It probably didn't look so safe at that point in time. I was wondering, did you ever notice the dynamic between Akkad and Dimension? Like, was it nice or was there tension?
I think we never got to a point where anything simmering could really go to boil because it was the directive was get this movie made. Everybody wanted to see it made. So that was very helpful. I have a feeling at points of absolute affluence and success, you can really stack mountains between yourself and in the conversations to get something made. You know, it's kind of like mm-hmm. another potential trap door to the development hell process. This one didn't have any of that. I was scanning my passport to go location scout. I had motion tests of a Michael Myers. I was boarding things, right? And yeah. like, you know, pacing camera moves to cues and songs. Well, it had to be that thought out to execute it and drag something across the line, kicking and screaming, that would be a respectful entry, that would be our best foot forward, and try to punch above its weight. Because they all wanted it to be great. Mm-hmm. And that was nice. But the math and the ultimately the deal with the rights was going to make that a really tough thing to vault.
Yeah. There was just constant shenanigans with that company, unfortunately. And
yes. like, sounds like shenanigans.
So, and, you know, we were in, yeah, we involved a lot.
The charm of it was, you know, everybody wanted it to be great, but then sometimes they're just like, well,
weird stuff happens.
Something yeah. great, you still got to need, you're going to need the time and the resources.
Yeah, you need to be supported to some degree, I would imagine.
So I'm sure, I think, you never said this, but I'm sure he's thrilled when it moved to Jason Blum and Universal. I mean, you know, which.
Yeah.
You know, he's the best in the business right now.
It seems like the right home for sure.
Yeah. It's just like.
Who gets Oscar chatter talk? Who gets nominated? I mean, like Jamie Lee.
Yeah, Curtis there was.
Not only brought back an important character, but also leveled up a conversation about trauma, surviving. Like, there was more to this movie than the mask. It was about a condition of people again. Yeah. And the mask was the metaphor for the things we do not understand, the irrational force.
There was definitely a battle between Malik and Bob, always just to keep not gimmicky, just stay away from the gimmicks as much as possible. That was Malik's thing. I mean, he this is his baby. He's respected it mm-hmm. more than anyone, and he just wanted it to be, you know, have that tone and the intensity and Bob did too. He understood that, but you know, Bob's a salesman and he was thinking about the poster. So he just was thinking, I need these. He didn't always have 100% faith in things. And we worked with him on Hellraiser and
Scanners,
you know, Scanners, and I mean, probably some other ones too, but has that salesman thing in him where he, like, well, Jason Blum is just like, fuck it, it's Halloween. And how am I going to get you to go see it? Hey, I just got, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis. And here's and John Carpenter. And then he's like, I'm in. And to get people hyped with that, he's like, and oh, John did a remix of the original score. And I'm just like, fuck,
it's
yeah.
Easy. It's so easy. I feel like.
Sometimes you overthink it.
They overcomplicate things. And maybe they're not truly horror fans. Like, I think you have to have that in some degree in your heart, which I think Blum does have. Would you be okay if we moved on into like the content of Halloween Returns? Because I am interested. Now, who here, me and myself included, would be the best person to attempt giving a quick synopsis of this script, in your opinion?
I'd like to hear you say it, sir.
Oh no! That why did I bring myself up? Why did I do that? I could try, but it's just going to be comedy. It's just going to be humor. I'm not going to do you justice, but I could try.
Please,
if you want me to.
I want you to, Melton.
Dear God. Okay.
Well, I used to be a screenwriter, a story.
You used to be a screenwriter. Way to go!
Well, you know.
Wow, what happened?
Now we collect stickers.
This project. Go ahead. How would you summarize this?
Okay,
this
I'm gonna project? Try. Oh, I'm gonna. You're gonna be so mad. Are you ready? And sure. I'm going. All right. So it starts off where the first film ended off, and you're in Michael Myers' perspective, and he falls, and we're seeing it from his eyes. He continues his mayhem for a little longer. He attacks another young woman. I believe kills somebody else too. And is apprehended and then gets taken away. And then we fast forward to right now, like present day, and Michael Myers is about to be executed. So we're seeing him sort of from like the theater chamber, and he's about to get electrocuted. And like everybody's there that saw him like murder their mom and their wife, and everyone's like waiting to see this guy get it. But he doesn't get it. Because instead of giving him the normal kill you stuff, they gave him the ooju juju kill you juice. And it just happened to like get into his adrenaline. And then that at the same moment, some kind of storm hits, lights go out, he escapes, kills a bunch of people, and decides that he is going to finish what he didn't get did originally. So he's on his way home. So he's going to kill off a bunch of the people. Well, is he killing off the people that were watching him die, or is he killing off the people that he didn't manage to kill the original night? This is a question for you guys.
Your pitch is getting a little soft. It's getting a little soft.
Oh, am I losing it?
I love the beginning.
Wait a minute, I'm not done. You know what? Honestly, it is. It is just going to keep going downhill from here. Okay, no, someone help me out. I got the audience warmed up.
Yeah, someone has to come in. Like the scene from Dudes Where My Car, where they try to order and just and then.
You know, I didn't write this thing. Maybe I did. Who knows? Okay. Someone save me. Someone come fill in the gaps. Okay, so he's about to get electrocuted. Power goes out.
No, remember, he sees the daughter of Dr. Rogers. And that's the thing.
Yeah.
In the first movie, it has nothing to do with brother or sister. I'm at this house and I see this girl, and that is who I'm going to kill. And so we did the same thing.
He's about to iris out.
He's okay. He's done. He's like, I'm going to die. I've had enough.
Karen, or was Karen an adult?
Karen is the one who crawls away
with the knife.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's wearing a knife inside of her.
She was named Karen before Karen became a thing. Okay.
Yeah.
You could have saved Karen as an entity. The proverbial Karen you could have saved. Oh, well.
Yes.
So,
she's a cane now. Okay. I'm with you.
When he's about to dip out to black. That is when, and we pulled this from facts. So a lot, depending on where you were to do lethal injection, the reason a lot of it was also being yanked and deemed like really an awful way to go, even when putting down a killer, is that a lot of the batches were botched. They had extinction rates amongst themselves. So it wasn't easy to get a good batch. So now imagine, like, you got one to spike him into the red, two to get him into the black, last one to put him in a bag. And so you see the one that starts to spike him up. You see the one that's supposed to go black, and that's the line, the thicker substance that starts to go. So his heart is doing this as his vision, because we need to stay on his POV. He can't see his face. As he's watching the audience of people hoping he dies, or, you know, rubbing the faces off their family photos, just wanting his heart to stop.
Just and then as that thing
starts to shrink, wouldn't you know, that cop that couldn't kill him right then because he was pulling a little girl to safety that reminded him of his daughter now is realizing his little girl is the one trying to calm a kid who saw his family die from hyperventilating and like, whoa. And then sure enough, Michael Myers, that iris goes, whoa, finds her and focuses and like, now you see that he's been given more than rage and a demand to die. He's been given a purpose once again. Yeah.
Got an objective now.
He gets to come on out and do his thing.
Okay, incredible.
Yeah, so he's killing the descendants of the people who caught him and or he didn't kill originally. Mm-hmm. And so, but keep in mind. So we have the you know, that all plays out. We need, you know, this and that, and then he
Did you wrap the redraft with the Loomis tag?
Yeah, I did. We're setting up the return of Loomis, but Loomis was
the right way to do it. And you wouldn't have seen him, right? Or would you have?
The idea was to get Jason Isaacs for one day.
Okay.
And have him play that. So then, you know, in a, let me see, I wonder if I can, you don't hear the theme until, and it'd be the Shape Stocks again. So I think it would be like this would begin over like the end credits as you see like everything open in the hospital, and then these two guys in gray come in with Cochrane to fetch the body of Harry Grimbridge, but the two guys in gray set off the metal detectors. They're like, well, you can't go in there, and they're oddly robotic. And then, you know, in comes in this the pale trench coat.
Yeah.
Goes up to Hunt, whose tongue has kind of been held back together, like, I tried to kill him, I tried to kill him, I tried to kill him, Sam. Him. This is no him. He's purely and simply evil. And you keep cutting to credits as everyone else is screaming and crying, like, he's out there, he's out there. Sheriff Brackett, no need to arm me, I've got my own gun. And then it was to end as everybody else is fleeing and baking in, because, like, the house fell, we don't have him in the house. And then see the doctor raise the lapels of his trench coat in front with the red and blue lights, and then just slowly go down to his gun, tapping on his hip, and just have him to say, "Come on, boy." And then you go back to the burning house, and Michael's hand slowly picks up his mask. He puts it back on and begins walking towards the hospital.
Okay, perfect. So we have a gorgeous opening description. We have a great ending, but everything in between we've forgotten about. A big question I have. So obviously you have a bunch of teens also to get murdered off in this one as well. Why no Laurie Strode? It feels very like a purposeful decision to avoid her.
Well, taken out of the equation, like it was a legal financial note.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you guys weren't being clever.
It was not on the table. It was not allowed on the table. So
even just the character.
So if we were gonna, because then our other thing was like also
the timeline is
looking
different.
At the Dark Knight, if you will, like the Christopher Nolan Dark Knight. What they did with characters, like, okay, if we're bringing in Loomis at the end, then perhaps a Laurie Strode can still happen. Because Laurie Strode can still be down the line as something, a totem of safety, a beacon of hope that can be up in jeopardy.
Because I distinctly remember us, you know, of course, bringing it up. I think everyone naturally does of like, can we? And Bob felt like he had already done it. He did it. He's like, I did it in H2O.
I think it's kind of a good idea to move forward.
And so, just, you know, that was just his instincts at the time. And then, of course, the first thing they do with Halloween Kills, it's like, oh,
just bring her right back.
Yeah.
I've noticed in your script, there are a few, you're not bringing back old characters like some of the other versions have done, but it seems like you have new characters that are archetypally fill-ins for some of our old characters, but at the same time, they're completely different.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to try to say a few things in there and also do some things with Michael Myers where he would have one new move or one new kind of gesture, just something simple. But in my head, I was always thinking this is the return of Elvis when Elvis showed up in all black leather and he'd been counted out for who knows how long and he just owned it. So he would be sleek, he would be lithe, he wouldn't move any differently. He might do one thing to complement the head tilt. And so I was thinking, like, if we find this particular knife that comes from Roger's knife block, or Hunt's knife block, that's the thing he'll always tap to let him know he's there, but not want to let him know where he is just yet. Just let that ting ting come out. Okay, fine. Let those little moments sneak in, but then also see him make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So, like this one bit I was pretty thrilled with was we had a, let me see if I can find it. Are you familiar with the great Leon Bridges? Awesome artist.
Yes.
This song, River. Okay. All right. Hang on. I kind of like the idea of this couple, like, having a romantic interlude. But then you go off to the lonely kid and you're realizing you're coming out from a house that has all these windows. And then the daughter character we're following is out there kind of licking her wounds emotionally. And that's when she sees something a little red in the corn and follows it in until she gets a sight line on this absolute perfect shape in the bottom of this house, just looking up at all of her friends and then kind of picking a couple instruments as their footfalls are guiding his attention, and then slow the world down as she's trying to figure out who she can call to help without giving away her position, right? And then just watch the slow ballet of something dead coming for something alive. But okay, if we can get in that way, so you're not feeling something propulsive and synth in that moment, but you're starting to feel bad for the kids as death is walking coming for them like a river. There you go.
I can see it. I can see it fresh in my mind's eye. Not to pivot 100%, but I've heard you guys are fans of Jillian Jacobs and we're hoping to cast her.
I wanted her to be our Karen. Yeah.
Really? Like, it was Karen. Of course it was Karen. Did you talk to her?
Nope. Never got that far. She was
never got that far.
Called, Milton turned me on to this movie. Was it Midnight in the Garden or... it was this really dark drama she was a lead in.
The kid.
Yeah,
it was when she's a mom.
No,
she ended up being an adult.
The one where she's kidnapped.
Yes,
Jillian Jacobs was once kidnapped in something. Cool.
Oh, yeah. this is a really dark movie. What was it called?
It's a very dark movie, but you're like...
I mean, to me, she's Community and Fear Street. I don't have too many other references.
Mm. Wow.
Community is a big reference point for me.
But like, I just thought, like, as a force, somebody I knew had a comedy presence and a popular one, but also did this movie that was just... would just be seared into your mind, like how tragic it was. Like, ooh, now that's somebody that we can hoodwink with a dramatic kettle whistle.
Yeah, yeah, she would bring the charisma, but also does horror great. Did you guys see Fear Street?
Gardens of the Night.
Gardens of the Night. There you go.
That I have not heard of.
It's from 2008.
Oh, so she's not that old.
She's kidnapped as a kid, and then she's raised to think that she was. She's by pedophiles essentially, and she and a bunch of
kind
other
of a
kids
room
too.
Vibe. That's heavy duty stuff.
And then then they like form this, you know, bond, and they get out. It's interesting that I read the script as a script reader, and it was one. I was like, oh my gosh, this is like such a moving script. And then it was made years later, and we've done like sizzle reels and stuff like that, and we use a lot of imagery from it because it's kind of just. Snuck out and but it's quite it's just really heavy. That's the thing, it's so heavy.
I'm here for heavy.
Another favorite movie, Heavyweights by Judd Apatow.
You guys are out of my reference points sometimes, and that's okay, we're all different. Before I move on into my conclusions period where I ask you about other projects on the go, do you have anything that you'd want to like wrap up in your world of Halloween Returns? Is there any other tidbits or give it to me?
I think anybody with the hope and the just start with the hope to try and tell a story. Just because the biggest door you thought would open for you slams shut so hard on you that it snaps a few fingers back. Don't fall. Try the door again. Make your own key, open it again. The best thing that ever happened out of something that in the moment felt like a giant curtain call was we got to make another movie, something that took us 10 years after we'd written it to get done. And it was the toughest one, the tightest budget, but every hurdle of the Halloween process prepared us for it. And it was our first tomato. And that led to our second tomato and our third tomato. And so, yes, the river was supposed to go in one way, but the deltas have also been absolutely wonderful. And so that is a possibility for anybody. Doesn't matter what pursuit is. Don't let the biggest door closing tell you there isn't another way through.
Yes, I think this is good advice, and I have faced this myself numbers of times. So what can you guys tell me about Unhuman? Because I'm interested.
Oh my God, I can't. I want to be judged by this. I want this to be like, Dunstan, you can only show one thing and we will decide whether you get to work again or never work at all again ever.
But you haven't made it yet, so you don't know. Has it been shot?
It's been shot. I'm in post right now, man.
You're in post. Yeah, you know.
I mean, that might even be a head right there. We don't
Who's
know.
Who's that person? Hi, person.
You might find out.
Oh, okay. Very exciting.
Might be something. Yeah. This was an absolute joy. Blumhouse set us up for success in New Orleans. Our lead actor, Brienne Chu, is amazing. She's one of the leads of I Know What You Did Last Summer that's coming back.
Yeah.
Alex Fellow. Uriah, Lo Graham, Drew Sheed of Halloween 2018 and Halloween Kills, Benjamin Wadsworth. I could go on. My God, CJ, like our cast is phenomenal, and we also have a marvelous role by our dear friend Peter Giles, who returns. And this one, please judge me right now. Charlie Clouser of the Nine Inch Nails of Saw is doing our score.
Charlie Clouser was of Nine Inch Nails? I didn't know that. I'm very familiar with all of his scores, but that's cool.
Yes. And he, you know, we couldn't afford him, but bless him, he watched it and said, I'm in.
Oh my God, that Dead Silence score, I listened to that.
Isn't it marvelous?
Nothing's better.
His cue called Brandon is one that I try to source in a lot. It's so wonderful and haunting and damn.
Oh, it's just so good. Oh, he was in Nine Inch Nails. That makes sense.
And I mean, is this might even be the first Blumhouse horror movie that already has its action figures ready to go. Just saying.
Damn. Okay, so, wow, you're already working with Blumhouse. Could Halloween Returns be the follow-up to Halloween Ends? That's my question right now.
Well, do you know, in the era of the many multiverses, I don't see why not. If a story, if it is merited, if it does feel like it can exist, I mean, right now, the only thing that could kill Michael Myers in terms of Halloween Returns is
Returns
rights, you know, all that stuff. It may not be possible in the realm of that, but because the
problem with Returns is that Dimension owns the script.
Oh,
but that's it. So that means that they would, you know, so that will never happen ever.
So that's too bad. But you have to write a new script. Oh, it's possible.
Although, wait. Actually, now I think about it, though, because Dimension owns Dimension now. Back.
Oh, damn. I mean, don't tease us, because we have some very sensitive listeners that are desperate for that series to return.
So this is Postmortem Customs, and this was made. So I want to give Postmortem Customs a shout out, because this little guy was waiting for me when I got home from Unhuman, actually. And
I retweeted that, and then Marcus bought it.
I did.
Yeah.
Why not? I love it. I'd have that in my house. It's cute and scary, like Chucky. P.S. Have you seen the new Chucky yet?
I caught some of the first episode last night.
Okay, cool.
But
cool.
I didn't. You know, I got to watch it now, like all in.
I got to see the first four episodes because I reviewed it, and I mean, I'm here for it. I'm liking it.
So pretty great.
Yeah, I'm feeling it. Okay, so. Since you brought it up, The Collected, any scoops? Can I get anything to print?
I nothing fit to print yet, only in the sense that, you know, that has to be, I want that to be as official and as loud as a thunderclap, because that's another, bringing back that word hope, when people are so kind to check in on its pulse, we want to be back with something definitive, a yes. Uh-huh. When and here's how. And I mean, the real circumstance is you hear nothing and then all of a sudden you see a trailer and you're like, what? They did it? You know, that.
I'm getting all of these messages on all of the posts that I'm making that are like, you should know they're actually doing it. And all of this hearsay is and rumors are rampant right now. So I am prepared for that.
I will say this. Every time that happens, it's not just heard by a few. It's heard by many. And all of those become arrows that fit nicely in the quiver to bring that sucker back and also do it the right way. So hopefully, hopefully we'll have something to talk about in the podcast of things that escaped hell.
Wow. Escaping hell. My spinoff. any updates on Final Destination that you're allowed to give me or not give me?
Hoping something is said soon. That's a marvelous process, a marvelous best franchise, and really has a
And part five was so good. How could they have stopped after that?
It was awesome.
Again, they're expensive, and so
they look expensive. They really do.
Yeah. And it's part of the studio system, and people second guess everything, and and it's just how it goes. Doesn't it feel like such a movie that it would be perfect on HBO Max.
Beyond perfect. Put a Pretty Little Liar in there.
Yeah, perfect.
It's raring to go.
Plus, it's also been long enough where the perfection of five completing a circle now leaves a question where it can come back and feel new and you can honor it. Like, I'll go back to Candyman. Candyman honored everyone's love for everything that came before it and yet told a story personal, so great. I wanted to start it again just to listen to it. The soundscape and Nia DaCosta's direction was so elegant and wonderful. Gorgeous. It was like, I think it sets a new standard for what you can do with horror and what you can do with heart and with the mindset of telling something that was so special about Candyman was there was a tragedy and a romance to it. And like in this case,
could have used more Philip Glass. I'm sorry. That's true. That maybe Feast 3. I don't know.
Gulliver used a sampling of Barry Lyndon's score.
Anything's possible.
You know, I remember when he was doing that. That was pretty fun. I mean, maybe like Ricky and the Flash could use a little more full press.
You're right. Anything can do it. Can you give us a bit of a log line for Unhuman?
I wonder if I can.
You can.
Currently, this is the first credits you'll see is a Blumhouse After School special.
Okay, well, presented I'm sold.
With the student teacher division. And what we're hoping to bring the kids is just a story that's going to help us all understand ways to get along or move along and, you know, maybe don't end up in a body bag, but end up achieving your dreams.
That's the goal. I love that.
Yeah, a little more succinct one is what is teed up as a wonderful opportunity for teens that are from all disassociated backgrounds trying to earn extra credit on a field trip, run afoul of something that may not be here, there, or anywhere, but is a fast ticket to terror. These kids signed up for more than a grade. They're going to be valued on their ability to survive.
Hot scoop. You're going to have to see something on Dread Central probably this week. Sorry.
I hope to be more eloquent, but yeah, here I can tell you this, that we are in post. It's being scored. It was a marvelous opportunity. Uh-huh. And I tell you, this cast delivered something that, please. I mean, I cannot wait for this one to get out.
When can we expect to maybe see it?
2022.
That's when we're coming. Very specific. First quarter.
Well, mind you, we haven't been told what quarter or when we can start it. And the other thing is, isn't this going to depend on what some things that happen in our industry too? If things can be completed,
if and when, yeah.
So yeah, we're in a good spot in that this sucker has been shot, locked, and is now ready to rock.
Amazing. So now that you guys are sort of wrapping up on that, what is next for both of you? What's coming up?
We just quit, actually. We're done.
All right. Retirement. That's beautiful.
I'm raising it. No, I got nothing else.
All right. And Patrick, are you also retired?
Well, we've always been living semi-retired. Beautiful. Yeah, I mean, we're finishing. Marcus is posting on Unhuman. We're working on that sort of Alice in Wonderland thing for Live Nation. Mm-hmm.
Sweet.
And then that's about all we can really say at this point.
No more scary stories to tell in the dark?
There are
a pair of scary stories that are coming. That which will be fun. So hopefully,
right. brightly lit. You know, not necessarily not in the dark. All right. I mean, this has been very exciting, very awesome. I think people are going to love this conversation. Do you guys like to be found online? Like, do you have anywhere that you want to pitch, like a Twitter or an Instagram? Where can we find you if you so choose to be found?
I am on Twitter and unverified. Pretty easy to find.
Well, she's a verified queen. All right. Well, we'll find you.
Twitter or Instagram, either is fine. Also,
okay.
And it's just
I'm pretty shy on Instagram.
Patrick W. Melton.
All right.
Pretty easy to find.
I'm gonna have to get that out there. All right. Well, thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back with another episode of Development Hell.
Thank you for listening to the Dread Podcast Network.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.